Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. We're bringing you new conversations in this new year. Financial fitness is a popular New Year's resolution, and we wanted to explore some new and hopefully inspiring ideas for approaching your finances. So we asked Tanya Hester to join us. She's the creator of an award-winning blog titled Our Next Life. And her 2019 book is Work Optional, Retire Early, the Non-Penny-Pinching Way. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Beth.
Glad to have you here. I want to give a bit more background before we begin. Tanya and her husband, Mark, live in the Lake Tahoe area. They had good-paying day jobs, but they had debt to pay off, too, right? So they took second jobs at times for extra money and had a goal of retiring early. I believe you're both Gen Xers, correct?
Technically, yes. Just
and you
barely.
Were targeting your retirement somewhere in your late 30s around age 40. So take the story from there. What happened?
Yeah. My husband, Mark, and I were living in LA at the time, actually, when we came up with this goal. And I had some credit card debt, some student loan debt, not a ton, but a little bit, a car loan that I had financed 100%. I didn't even put a dollar down.
Ooh.
And that was really the start of our financial journey. And figuring out how to get out of debt is really what then led into the next step of saving up for a place in LA, which, as you know, really high-priced market. And then we eventually decided to move to Tahoe. We sort of jokingly say we were the only people to benefit from the financial crisis because Mark was already working remotely in LA and my office that I was working for at the time closed, but I kept my job. So we were able to be fully remote. We could move up to Tahoe and be in the mountains. But for us, being able to retire early was very much driven by the fact that my father's disabled, I have a genetic disability, and knew that I couldn't necessarily put off all the things that people do in their 50s or 60s until that age because I might not be fully mobile. And that really motivated us to think about, okay, how can we save? How can we earn a little bit more and put that money away? And once we actually did the math and realized, you know, if we really work hard for 6 to 10 years, we should be able to do this. That clock started after we had taken care of the debt. So we weren't starting from scratch at that point. But for us, it was very much about finding ways to trick ourselves, to be perfectly honest, of thinking about how can we hide money so that we aren't tempted to spend it. And I really am such a big fan of that approach because we only have so much willpower and we have so many choices we have to make every day. And if we rely on that to put money away each month or each week, it's unlikely to happen. And so the systems that we figured out to do that are really a big part of the book.
So give me an example of tricking yourself and hiding money.
Yeah. So this is the start of a new year. Some of your listeners, I'm sure, have gotten a bit of a pay raise because that tends to happen around this time of year. What we would do is we would set things up so that if you have an HR department at work that can split your paycheck, which often a lot of payroll companies can do, we would have whatever the new raise we got, we would have that automatically go into savings, which we didn't see, so that the amount coming into checking would stay the same. Or we would set up automatic investments to go out on payday so that we never really saw that money in our checking account. And as we continued to grow our income, we kept the amount that we saw in checking the same year after year. So we didn't feel like we were squeezing ourselves or suffering. We just never saw the money. And then it kind of piled up in the background. And I started with $50 a paycheck. You know, it started small. I think this is something that just about anyone can do. But over time, that number grew much, much bigger.
You know, I don't want to say what people shouldn't do, what any of us shouldn't do in the new year. It's better to focus on what we should do. And in that sense, you start every conversation about money by focusing on life, not actually on the dollars and cents. How so? Why so?
Yeah, because money really is just a tool. You know, there are certainly those out there who love to be frugal for the sake of it, or who love to save for the sake, who get really into focusing on their investments. But in truth, that's not most of us. Most of us see money as something that can buy us great experiences, time with friends and family, maybe some stuff that we like to have, you know, that makes us feel good. And saying, okay, you need to save this instead, you can't spend it, feels very negative. It feels very restricting. But if instead you think about let's take a big step back. Let's look at what is it that I actually want out of life and how can money help me get there? It's a very different conversation, I think, in particular for couples, because couples bring a lot of different baggage to money conversations. It's really very much a manifestation of different emotions and experiences you've had. And if you can think about it not as like, what are you doing that I don't like and what are you doing that I don't like? You instead look at what is the life we want together and how can money help us get there, it becomes so much easier to make some choices that do maybe involve cutting back a bit.
Your book is full of a lot of lists. It's sort of a workbook in and itself. For example, you begin by saying in your day-to-day life, when are you the happiest? And what do you want to make time for every day? What are your favorite hobbies? And you're not trying to advise people to retire wealthy or build huge wealth, but just, as you said in your case, taking what your everyday realistic life is, work with that, and figure out how you can find freedom. Isn't that what we ultimately want?
Absolutely. And I think the fact that we call this early retirement, you know, it's a trendy term right now. There are a lot of stories out there on it, but that's not even really what this is about. This is about how can you make time in your life? We only get one shot at this. How do you make time for the things that are truly important and meaningful to you? Whatever that is. For some people, that might be traveling and seeing every country in the world. For others, it might be getting really good at knitting. You know, it can be super mundane down to huge adventure, but it's about making more time for that. And I think just giving ourselves the privilege of stepping back and considering those questions is really important and something we don't do enough. We get so caught up in the day-to-day, we don't step back and say, hey, what do I actually want more time for? And then when you start from that place, it's so much easier to say, okay, I'm willing to give up this thing that I normally spend money on because I know exactly what it's for.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tanya Hester. Her book is titled Work Optional. Her blog, which we've also posted a link to, is Our Next Life. The blog is award-winning. It's another good guide, but you've written a number of blogs, and what you're trying to do is empower everybody to just keep money as a tool but live a happier, better life. The life maybe that's more in your dreams than in your reality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that everybody comes to money differently. Everyone has different circumstances. And so it's not about saying, here are the things you have to do. It's about saying, what do you want out of life? How can you make work less of a driving factor in that so that you're less motivated by money? I think to your point about not accumulating wealth, I think it's much more about figuring out what is enough. You know, there's so much now. We think about decluttering, that movement of trying to look critically at what we own. I think of this as very similar of what are we spending money on that doesn't bring us joy that we can eliminate to really get to true happiness.
I gave an indexed card to each of the Insight team members and said, give me some questions. So these questions will reflect the diversity on our team members. So here's the first one. How do you save money as a young person if it doesn't feel like you have money to save in the first place between debt, student loans, monthly payments? The whole thing about saving can feel impossible.
I have been there, and I know a lot of folks can relate to that. Truly, the hiding money from yourself strategy is magical, even if it's starting with $5 per paycheck, something that you barely feel, and then gradually ticking it up little by little. I started with $50 a pay period. You could start with 10, and then maybe after you get adjusted to that and feel like, okay, I can make do, I don't miss it, you raise it to 20. I mean, we're talking small increments, but over time, that stuff adds up.
Because your jobs change, your income changes, hopefully, too.
Absolutely.
Next question. When making a budget, how should I include the variable expenses, such as groceries? Sometimes it's a $35 payment, and sometimes it's $100. So how do I account for this?
There are a lot of different ways that you can budget, and there are some great tools out there. You need a budget as a paid service, but that's a really great one that I recommend. Some folks will do the prior month budgeting. So whatever you earned last month, that's what you have to spend this month, taking out things like savings. And if you spend over in something like groceries, then you know you have to spend less elsewhere. Mark and I actually do what is the unbudgeting approach. So we only leave money in our checking account that we are allowed to spend. And so we just adapt. If we spend more on groceries one month, then that means we can spend less on entertainment, things like that. So giving yourself parameters so that it's hard to overspend is something that I really recommend.
How old were you when you retired?
I was 38.
And Mark was?
41.
All right, next question. Should you be investing in 401ks if you have credit card debt?
My advice to folks is to think of things sequentially. So if you get a match for your 401k at work, I recommend that you are taking advantage of that as quickly as you can. Of course, credit card interest is incredibly high, so you want to balance that. But in general, thinking about getting some emergency savings built up while you make minimum payments is a good first step. Then focus on growing those payments. And then as soon as you can, try to at least get as much of your 401k match as you can. And then once you're getting that, focus all the rest of the money you can on your debt.
What about kids in the equation? Should you be saving for their education? And what's the best method in your opinion?
Saving for kids and kids' college in particular is something that is very personal. I think parents should decide for themselves if they want to pay for that or not and at what level. Unfortunately, the tools that are out there, like 529 plans, aren't really as tax advantaged as they're often made out to be, and they often come with high fees. So it's good. This is something where it's good to talk to a tax advisor if you can. Just get maybe a one-time consultation or talk to a certified financial planner who can help you understand, based on your situation, what financial aid the kids are likely to qualify for and what that means for your savings. But absolutely, it's possible to think of the money you're saving going into different buckets potentially, so you're saving for your own retirement and your kids at the same time.
I'm so glad I asked our team members here. Here's the next question. Is there a formula for knowing how much you should be saving for retirement? A very common question for families and people who are all individual about their money, but is there a formula?
The very rough formula, and this is more of a starting point, is to first know how much you spend in a year, which the surprising thing, or maybe not so surprising, is most people don't actually know what that number is. So first, you have to know what your life costs. And once you know what your life costs, you can think about, okay, in retirement, do I expect that to be more or less? Often financial planners will tell you that it will be less, but that may not necessarily be true because you've got a lot more time to travel or to go to things that cost money. So really consider what you want your retirement to look like. Once you have kind of a ballpark of that, the formula is somewhere between 25 and 33 times that amount, your annual amount. That's based on a safe withdrawal rate question, which is more math than we probably want to get into right now. I talk about it at length in the book. I recommend going more toward the 30 times end of things, especially for younger people, since there's so many unknowns.
And you retired with how many times your amount?
We overdid it a little bit. We were more in the 35, 36 range.
And by the way, the last 2-3 years that you worked like crazy, and 1 year in particular didn't take a vacation to try to get to the finish line, in hindsight, was that good? Was that wise?
Part of that was, it was the 2016 election, and we both worked in political consulting, so some of that was circumstantial. But no, I think if we were going to change anything, we would slow down a little bit. We would have taken more vacation, spent a little bit more money. There were a couple of trips that we passed up on going on that were once in a lifetime destination weddings with friends. Mm. And we could have afforded them, but we said, oh, we will miss our target by this small amount if we take those trips. And that's a big regret. So I do think it's important, even if you get very excited and very motivated to save, that you don't miss out on life while you're doing it.
One more here. Should an average working family have a living trust for the family assets?
This is a little bit beyond what I focus on. This is a good question for a certified financial planner. But in general, I don't think that you should consider a trust necessary. And often many experts will tell you that it's sort of the bar to assess the advice you're getting. If someone is pushing a living trust on you, that is perhaps a sign they're trying to get as much money out of you as they can. But it's a good question to talk about with your tax advisor.
So leave us with a final thought in approaching the new year. We're at the beginnings. Maybe we're still inspired to set up some new plan or discipline, a new way of thinking about finances in 2020.
I think spend your willpower on things that you have to decide every day, like what you're going to eat, what you're going to exercise. Try to make your money as mindless as possible. Set up something today where you have $20 from each paycheck or $100 or whatever it is that aligns to your means, that it goes immediately to savings or to an investment account or to your retirement. And if you have a 401k, a 403b, something at work, set it so that you're increasing it now, but that you escalate it so it automatically goes up 1% or 2% next year. You'll never even miss that money if you never saw it in the first place. And you'll look down the road and you'll go, wow, look how much I saved, go me. Money is the easiest thing to automate in life, and it really is the key to doing it successfully.
Hmm. Retiring earlier, by the way, didn't give you a perfect life, did it?
Not at all. If you're a stressed out person in life, you're probably still going to be stressed in retirement. You have a lot more time that you actually have to maybe deal with some of the issues that work can distract you from. And, you know, you're still you and life still happens. But I will say you still have problems in early retirement, but they are in general better problems.
All right. We need to check back with you in about maybe quarterly and just keep people on task through the year and keep them focused on these new ways of thinking. I'm really glad that you made the trip today from Tahoe. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me, Beth.
That is Tanya Hester. Again, the blog is Our Next Life. We'll post a link to it. The book is Work Optional, and you can find it all at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.